Hello, this is John with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, February 13th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Flu Strep Infections Spike in Central Illinois. Hospitals, Schools, Workplaces, Feeling Effects of Illness by Paul Sweech and Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. If you feel lousy, you have company. Thousands of central Illinoisans are sick with influenza, flu-like illness, and strep throat, keeping kids home from school, parents home from work, and healthcare providers busy. Compared to last flu season, we have seen a significant increase in patients testing positive for the flu, with some patients requiring hospitalization, said Tony Bishop McWayne, Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. During the first 12 days of February, Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal surpassed the number of positive flu cases diagnosed during all of January, infection preventionist Laurel Mode said. Advocate Eureka Hospital's Emergency Department and Immediate Care have seen a significant increase in flu and flu-like illness in the past 2 weeks, spokeswoman Lynn Hutley said. In Decatur, HSHS St. Mary's Hospital is experiencing unusually high flu numbers and continuing to trend upward, said infection preventionist Rachel Deerwester. Absenteeism has increased at some McLean County Unit 5 and Bloomington District 87 schools. The main message we have for parents is, if your child is sick, please keep them home, said Unit 5 spokeswoman Dana Brown. Guidelines for all school districts are to keep a child home if they have had a fever of 100 degrees or higher within the past 24 hours, have vomited or had diarrhea within the past 24 hours, have a disruptive cough, or have a contagious illness such as strep throat that requires antibiotics. Students should be fever-free for 24 hours without use of fever-reducing medicine before returning to school. When in doubt, keep your child home, said Sue Rutherford, a nurse at District 87's Bend Elementary School. Among symptoms to watch for are fever, headache, chills, body aches, sore throat, and coughing, Rutherford said. If we reach 15% absenteeism because of illness, we'll implement a communicable disease protocol, Brown said. That protocol includes focused custodial work and an increased emphasis on hand washing, she explained. Three elementary schools neared the 15% threshold the past couple of weeks, said Brown, but were actually on a downward trend. She declined to identify the school, but said custodial workers did a deep cleaning at one school last weekend. District 87 spokeswoman Julia Perez said Bloomington High School, Washington Elementary School, and Sarah Raymond School of Early Education have reported a higher level of absences this season compared to previous years. It's mostly strep throat and influenza A and B, said Perez. The BHS nurse said it's starting to impact staff attendance, too. Perez said, across the district, many students are out with flu-like symptoms, but they haven't been diagnosed. At OSF Healthcare St. James John W. Albrecht Medical Center in Pontiac, including the clinic and prompt care there, 322 people have tested positive for flu. 10 have been admitted to the hospital, and 7 were transferred to hospitals that offer a higher level of care, said infection preventionist Tina Barton. We are currently seeing a spike in strep throat in our community, Barton said. We also saw an increased number of respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, this winter, both in adults and children. At St. Joseph, 171 people have tested positive for flu, and 25 were admitted to the hospital, said infection preventionist Amy Benoit. At Bloomington Normal OSF Prompt Care, 377 people have tested positive for flu this season, with the number increasing significantly in the past 2 weeks, spokeswoman Libby Allison said. At OSF Ergos, Urgent Care for People on the Go, in Bloomington Normal, 169 people have tested positive for flu. At St. Mary's in Decatur, 374 people have tested positive for flu, compared with 252 for the same period last year, Dear Wester said. At Decatur Memorial Hospital, including its express cares and physician offices, there have been more than 700 positive flu tests, an increase of 80% over last year, said Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer Sharon Norris. While flu and flu-like illnesses are on the rise, especially in the past 2 weeks, it is difficult to predict if we are seeing a peak in flu volumes yet, Mode said. Healthcare providers urged people to reduce their risk of flu by getting a flu shot, washing your hands often, coughing and sneezing into your sleeve, and staying home when you're sick. The next article on the front page is headlined, Tigers, Snow, and Cold, Oh My! Humans bundle up as snow temps fall. Zoo takes it in stride. By Sierra Henry and Paul Sweech. Bloomington. Tigers and monkeys may sit cozy indoors during a snowstorm, but Miller Park Zoo's snow leopards, red pandas, and otters are no stranger to inclement winter weather. In fact, some animals even enjoyed playing in the snow Wednesday afternoon as the zoo operated as usual, said Jay Tetzloff, Director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts for Bloomington and Zoo Director. Anytime we have a snowstorm, if it's under 8 inches of snow, it's pretty much a standard day for us, he said. I think there's definitely some that enjoy it. The snow leopards seem to be more active, and some of the younger animals, if it's their first snow and they've never encountered it before, that's kind of fun to see how they react. A winter weather advisory went into effect for McLean and DeWitt counties at 11 a.m. Wednesday and continues through 10 a.m. Thursday. Snow began falling about 2 p.m. That prompted McLean County Unit 5 to close all of its schools Thursday. Macon, Logan, and Coles counties were under a winter weather advisory until early Thursday, but Livingston County is under a winter weather advisory until noon Thursday. Hazardous driving conditions will extend into Thursday morning with patches of black ice on the roads, said Chris Gielhardt, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Snow will reach 4 to 6 inches in Bloomington Normal and areas along and north of Interstate 74. Areas south of Interstate 70 can expect a few inches less, with totals of 4 inches for the Decatur area and 3 inches in the Mattoon-Charleston area. The town of Normal issued a parking ban beginning 5 p.m. Wednesday until further notice, meaning no parked cars are permitted on any streets and may be ticketed. For people who wish to come in out of the cold, Connect Transit will have a bus as a designated warming station parked outside the McLean County Health Department building, 200 West Front Street, Bloomington, from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday and Friday, said Connect Transit Marketing Director Jeff Holtke. Home Sweet Home Ministries, 303 East Oakland Avenue, Bloomington, has opened its lobby for anyone who needs to get warm, and hats, gloves, scarves, and hand warmers are available, said Chief Executive Officer Mary Ann Pullen. The Salvation Army of McLean County's Safe Harbor Homeless Shelter, 208 North Oak Street, Bloomington, has opened as a warming center, meaning anyone who is homeless may use Safe Harbor to get warm during the day or night, said Salvation Army Development Director Angie Bubon. Illinois Department of Human Services has opened its offices as warming centers, meaning they may be used by people who need to get in out of the cold during weekday business hours. In Central Illinois, DHS offices are at 501 West Washington Street and 207 South Prospect Road, Bloomington, 1550 4th Street, Lincoln, 2970 Court Street, and 200 South 2nd Street, Pekin, 211 Fulton Street, Peoria, 707 East Wood Street, Decatur, and 1307 North Mattis Avenue and 705 North Country Fair Drive, Champaign. Back at the zoo, zookeepers and staff finished preparations for winter weather before October 1st, and all animals on exhibit can handle temperatures far below zero. Tetzloff said staff members keep a close eye on temperatures and will bring animals indoors as necessary, such as the tiger, who was staying warm and cozy inside with his toys Wednesday afternoon. The zoo stays open during its regular hours, 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., 7 days a week, even during a snowstorm. Since we are managed by the City of Bloomington, we follow their cues, Tetzloff said. If necessary, we would go to essential personnel, those who are going to take care of the animals, get their needs met, and go home. Tetzloff said the zoo averages 20 visitors a day on cold, snowy days. There were a few visitors wandering the zoo Wednesday afternoon as snow blew into Bloomington, including Jonathan Miller of Columbia, South Carolina, who stopped to visit the zoo after flying into Central Illinois Regional Airport for business. Miller watched the crocodile, which was staying warm underwater as it snowed. Zoo curator Peter Bervinich said, if needed, we'll add supplemental heat, so whether it's heat lamps on the side or, like our cranes, they have a covered shelter where they have a heat lamp and bedding in there for them. But as you can see, they're not in a rush to use it. Snow will taper by Thursday morning, but the wind will pick up with gusts reaching 25 miles per hour and temperatures expected to drop Thursday night, said Gilhart. By Friday morning, temperatures could drop to negative 5 with a wind chill of negative 15 degrees. The weather won't last long, however. Gilhart said temperatures will rise to the low to middle 40s on Sunday and Monday. Here is a story headlined, District 87 OKs Officials, Special Education, HR, Principal Jobs Filled at City Schools, by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. The District 87 School Board Wednesday night approved administrative changes that include naming an Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources, 4 principals, and an Assistant Principal, and creating an Assistant Director of Special Education. The board also approved the 2020-21 school calendar. Classes will begin August 20th and end May 27th, 2021, with 173 total days of student attendance. The administrative changes were announced earlier this month, subject to board approval. They take effect with the 2020-21 school term. The appointments include Sherilyn Thomas as Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources, succeeding the retiring Herschel Hanna. She has been principal of Bloomington Junior High School since 2012 and has been working for District 87 since 1997. Thomas's salary will be $120,000 for the first year of her contract, which runs through June 30, 2023. Her future salary will be determined by the superintendent and board based on an annual performance evaluation. My heart has been with District 87 since I walked into Bloomington Junior High School as an intern my sophomore year of ISU, Illinois State University, said Thomas. This is where I want to end my career. Catherine Hansen, principal of Stevenson Elementary School, was named to the special education position at a salary to be determined. The other administrators, their positions, and their salaries are Amanda Jarvis, Bloomington Junior High Principal, $98,000. Daniel Behrens Haar, Sheridan Elementary School Principal, $98,875. Jennifer McGowan, Bloomington Junior High School Assistant Principal, $81,567. Lynn Baber Shook, Stevenson Elementary School Principal, $81,125. And Guillermina Delgado, Bend Elementary School Principal, $75,000. Superintendent Barry Riley said, "A great thing for this district is we have very seasoned individuals ready to take over leadership roles." In other business, the board heard about plans for the Bloomington High School Drama Department to take students on a 9-day trip to London in June 2021. The trip will include seeing 4 theater productions, taking part in a theater workshop, visiting the Globe Theater and Shakespeare's Birthplace, and tours of various locations in and around London. Here is an Illinois State news story entitled, "State OKs $500 million for U of I Tech Hubs," by Jerry Nowicki. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Wednesday touted statewide benefits he said will result from a $500 million state investment in 15 hubs of a University of Illinois-led public-private research institute network. Illinois State University in Normal is one of the hubs. Pritzker, a Democrat, announced at a Chicago news conference on the site of one of the future developments that the state would release the funding, which was originally approved under former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and reauthorized in last year's state operating budget. The money is for the planning and construction of the Discovery Partners Institute, a public-private research and development and workforce development hub led by the UI, and 14 other hubs of a statewide program. "Today's announcement is so exciting. It will fast-track construction planning, and we hope to break ground for DPI in a few months," said UI President Timothy Killeen. The DPI campus will receive $230 million of the $500 million state investment and will be located in Chicago's South Loop in a development area known as the 78, so named because the real estate developer Related Midwest has plans to make it the city's 78th neighborhood. Pritzker said, through another UI-led program, the Illinois Innovation Network, or IIN, the investment's economic impact will be felt statewide. The IIN is a network of DPI and another 14 regional hubs, which will receive portions of the other $270 million in state funding. Those hubs include partnerships with all of the state's public universities, which will each create specific programs and facilities that fall in line with the IIN's and DPI's innovation, workforce development, and economic growth goals. The stated goal of the program is to train the state's workforce for in-demand technology jobs. As part of ISU's role in the network, a community makerspace, educational center, and Bloomington Normal Startup Incubator will be established. The makerspace and educational center will provide basic entrepreneurship education programs through a partnership with Heartland Community College and local high schools. The incubator will help with creation and growth of small businesses, guiding tenants through the early business development stages. Pritzker said, "Making Illinois a hub for technological innovation will make it a more desirable place for students specializing in technological fields to start their careers after college graduation." Through the Illinois Innovation Network, DPI's success will radiate across the state to 15 hubs from Chicago to Rockford to Peoria to Edwardsville, Pritzker said. "We are investing in workforce development and innovation and research and development all across our state." Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot echoed the governor and said the project could be a game changer for the city, which will also be making improvements to the area surrounding the new facility. She said it will help the city and state retain students upon graduation. The problem is, after we train and educate our students, they leave, she said. She said only about half of UI engineering graduates remain in the state, while only 38% of computer science and computer engineering graduates from the UI's Urbana-Champaign campus stay in the state after graduating. Today is all about turning all of that around, she said. Killeen quoted an economic impact study conducted by the Boston Consulting Group, which said the project will create 48,000 jobs in the next 10 years, creating an economic impact of $19 billion. According to DPI's website, programs at the facility will initially focus on our economy's existing strengths, data analytics and computing, and their applications in food and agriculture, health and wellness, finance and insurance, and transportation logistics. All of these industries have a strong Fortune 500 presence in the state. The state's investment will be met with private and university investment as well, including $230 million that is already committed from UI fundraising efforts. The governor's office released a document with other committed and pending non-state funds that total more than $500 million in private and other state university investment in the DPI facility and the other 14 state hubs. DPI has been operating out of temporary space in downtown Chicago, offering classes and hiring staff. Its leader is UI alum William Jackson, who is the former president of the Milwaukee-based Johnson Controls, which produces building security, climate control, and HVAC equipment, and fire suppression products. And here's some more Illinois news entitled, Traveling Eastern Illinois University Athlete Mistakenly Taken Down by Police. ACLU Has Filed a Lawsuit, by Barb Ickes. Stepping off a bus at an East Moline rest stop, the out-of-town college student had no idea what was about to hit him. Jalen Butler and his teammates from the Eastern Illinois University swim team were at the end of a long day. After competing in a conference championship swim meet in South Dakota, they spent the bulk of February 24, 2019, traveling back to Charleston, Illinois, in a rented coach with their school logo plastered on the sides. The parents of one of Butler's teammates lives in the Quad Cities, and arrangements were made to meet up with them at the rest area just over the Illinois border past the Interstate 80 bridge. The bus was hot, Butler recalled. We got out to stretch our legs. Though it was hot inside the bus, the temperature outside was in the teens as the hour approached 8 p.m. Butler, wearing his EIU team jacket, was heading back onto the bus when his coach suggested he take a selfie in front of Illinois' Buckle Up, It's the Law sign. The team had been taking pictures throughout the trip and posting them to social media to update parents and others on their location. As I took the picture, there was a line of police officers. They came to a screeching stop in front of me, Butler said. At that moment, I only knew a couple of things to do that my dad always told me. As a young black man, he had been taught by his dad to never give police a reason to think he would cause trouble. He remembered the lessons, and he dropped his phone, raised his hands, and got on the ground. He could not imagine what the police wanted with him, but they weren't messing around. Bus driver Todd Slingerland knew immediately that something was going wrong. I was sitting in the driver's seat waiting for the parents to get there, and Jalen was the last one to get back on the bus, Slingerland said. A car screamed in, and I jumped out of the bus, knowing something was going down that shouldn't be going down. As I got out, a second police car came screaming in. Two officers had Jalen on the ground, his face pressed into the snow, and an officer's knee pressed into his back. One cop was pointing a rifle, Butler and Slingerland said, and another had a gun pointed at the 19-year-old's head. He said, "If you move, I'll blow your expletive head off," Butler said. Slinger heard the same threat and shouted at the police that Jalen was his passenger and they were making a mistake. As he rushed back to the door of the bus and yelled for the coach, two more police vehicles arrived. The one officer was telling Jalen they were going to arrest him for resisting. But how could they arrest him for something he hadn't done? Slingerland asked. Their excuse for taking Butler into custody was that they thought the bus was being held hostage. I had all the lights on, so the bus was lit up. The bus had EIU on the side, and Jalen was wearing an EIU jacket. I told them to get the sheriff over there because this was a very big mistake. They said the sheriff was busy with an active shooter event. Meanwhile, Butler's mind was reeling. What in the world was going on? At least two Rock Island County Sheriff's deputies had rushed into the rest area, along with at least one officer from the East Moline and Hampton Police Departments. The identity of two other officers is unclear. The reason for their interest in Butler likely will be made known in Rock Island County Court, where the ACLU of Chicago has filed a lawsuit against the six officers, including two who are named as John Does. The suit alleges Butler was the victim of unlawful search and seizure, false arrest, excessive detention, excessive force, failure of bystander officers to intervene in unconstitutional conduct, and assault. Butler and the bus driver, Slingerland, said they immediately knew the police were making a big mistake. When the police realized it too, they said, they took off. I'm an old Navy man, said Slingerland, who has been an over-the-road driver for nearly 30 years. I've seen a lot, but I've never seen anybody screw up something as bad as they did this, especially the first two officers. None of this makes any sense. I have all the respect in the world for police officers, but I want them to body slam the guy who said what he said about shooting Jalen. Slingerland said he is certain it was a Rock Island County Sheriff's deputy who put the gun to the 19-year-old's head and threatened to shoot him. As far as I was concerned, they were assaulting an innocent victim with deadly force, Slingerland said. Butler said he knew what was happening was wrong. In fact, at one point, he asked for a badge number of the officer who threatened to kill him. He was ignored, he said. Mr. Butler informed at least two defendants that he wanted to make a complaint, the ACLU lawsuit alleges. The first defendant ignored him. The second defendant said, "There's nothing I can do." Neither defendant gave Mr. Butler any of the defendants' names, badge numbers, law enforcement agency affiliations, or any other information to enable him to file a complaint. The officers knew, according to the lawsuit, that they had made a mistake. Then they made matters worse. Defendants quickly realized that Mr. Butler was not the suspect for whom they were searching, informed the local dispatcher that it was a false alarm, the suit states. After several minutes of forcing Mr. Butler to lie face down on the ground while handcuffed, defendants allowed Mr. Butler to sit up. They did not, however, remove his handcuffs or inform him that he was free to go, even though they had already recognized that Mr. Butler was not the suspect for whom they were searching. Instead, according to the lawsuit, the officers told Butler he was being arrested for resisting arrest. They took him to a squad car, patted him down, searched his coat pockets, and placed him in the back of a squad car for several minutes. They then removed him from the car, took off the cuffs, and told him to get his ID off the bus. After producing his ID, Butler was released from police custody and the officers were gone. Asked what the officers were looking for that night, Villarreal said they were called in to assist on a Henry County incident. Nearly a year since the incident has passed, Butler's emotions have varied over time. In the beginning, and I didn't even know it, it was fear, he said. As the months went on, it was, why? Did I do something wrong? Then it became disappointment. I know not all officers are like that, but it was pretty disappointing what it's like to be of color in America. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for February 13th. Please stay tuned.